The next section that we're going to do is thyroid. We're going to look at your thyroid. Thyroid is really one of my favorite topics. It's very complicated, but it's also quite rewarding when you can get people turned around with their thyroid. People think thyroid is like it's a sentence for life, and that's not been my experience. Again, this is something I say at the beginning of all my presentations, and I encourage you to do the same as you're working with people and presenting, whether it's one-on-one or in a formal presentation. Some way of saying, I'm not diagnosing you. This isn't medical advice. This is education. I'm educating you about how your body works so that you can make really amazing decisions about how to take care of it. But if you are on any medication, if you are under the care of a medical practitioner, make sure that any changes you make to your diet and lifestyle are in conjunction with that practitioner. Now, we all know that we have patients that do not have a medical practitioner and don't want to have a medical practitioner because they don't want interventions in the medical and surgical realm. That's fine. And that's their decision. But you still have to tell them that you're not diagnosing them and that they need to work with their medical practitioner. It's just, you know, where it goes. You may be able to help them get solve all their problems without it, but if they are on medication or under the care, just to cover yourself, you should be telling people. So here's your thyroid. Your thyroid is a little butterfly-shaped gland that sits there right by your Adam's apple. And it's got two lobes, and it produces hormones that basically set the metabolic rate of every cell. They go out, they bind to the cells, and it sets the resting metabolic rate. So if you have too little thyroid hormone, the cells are not going to get enough stimulation, and your metabolism will go down, and you'll have a tendency to gain weight. And if you tend to have hyperthyroid, you will overstimulate and you burn too much. So let's look at the thyroid in more detail. These are the markers. Hopefully you can see that real well, but it's on your sheet. This one was relatively new. It's approximately the 36 to 49 on your spreadsheet. So let's go through these, and one at a time, we will make sure that we cover these. So TSH, what is TSH? TSH is thyroid-stimulating hormone. And thyroid-stimulating hormone is produced by your pituitary gland. And it's basically the nudge that says, hello, thyroid, wake up, produce some hormone, we need some. So the thyroid nudges the thyroid. The thyroid says, yeah, no problem, and it responds. And when it responds like that, the level of TSH is within the normal range. It's just a nice little gentle nudge. Now, the TSH values have been controversial for a really long time, and finally, the endocrinology people are seeing that the lower numbers are better. For a while there, if you got a lab done, the range was 0.5 to 5.5. It's a huge range, huge range. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, the Endocrinology Association decided, all the evidence says that it should be 3 or less. So they lowered it to between 1 and 3. Now you'll see that, but you still won't see that reflected on the labs. It's just what most people know to do, except more the conventional medical people. They don't necessarily ascribe to that. Well, now they're saying, the research is saying that they may even lower it more to between 1 and 2, which seems to me pretty narrow. But I just went to a thyroid seminar about two months ago, and they were talking a lot about the control, using specific parameters to measure the effectiveness of things or the function of something based on the range of control. So, for example, body temperature, right? Body temperature, approximately 98.6. 1 degree off of that is considered a fever. Right? If you're up at 99.6, you're considered to have a mild fever. If you have 2 degrees, 2% deviation from that is considered a fever and it's abnormal. Right? And same thing going the other direction. Whereas with TSH, if you see that number is 5, between 1 and 5, and you're off by one, it's way more. Because the range is, it's 1 to 5, right? And if you're off by one, that's 20% off. So if 4 is normal and 5 is normal and they're 20% off from each other, so he just thought that was ludicrous. That really, the most accurate measure of thyroid is actually body temperature. But that's not you know, state of the art. But what TSH measures is actually the level of T3 in the pituitary. What reaches the pituitary. Not necessarily reflective of what it is in the blood. Okay? And so if the level of thyroid hormone is not being maintained where it needs to be, the pituitary increases its output, and it keeps increases its output. And the levels of the T4 and T3 stay within range, but it's how much work does your pituitary have to do to get them within range. And once your TSH goes up high enough, it's considered to be a problem. And over time, and then the thyroid gets worn out, and it can't produce at all. Now, you want to understand why is the thyroid not producing, and that's where some of these other things come in. So our next marker is thyroxin, which is T4. And this is the amount. This is the total T4. It's the total amount of T4 that's produced by the thyroid. And that is a range of 6 to 12. So it's pretty tightly controlled. And you can see that the optimal range is not that much different than the range, the lab range. So that's the amount of thyroid that the thyroid makes. That's the amount of hormone the thyroid makes. If that goes low, it means that you've probably had a thyroid problem for a really long time. Because usually your TSH just keeps stimulating it, and it gets it to produce within reason. T3 uptake is one of the things that's included in the standard lab panel that is supposed to parallel free T3. And for a while I bought into that, and I would just look at it, and I'm like, there's something wrong here. They're not converting, but their T3 uptake is normal. I'm going to run a free T3. And sure enough, we'd run the free T3, and it wasn't, the T3 uptake was not really as accurate a marker. So I like to run free T3 on anybody that I suspect has thyroid problems. So T4 is the 80% of the output from your thyroid is T4. It's the basically storage form. It's the slow-acting form. The T4 gets converted to T3, which is the quick-acting form. It's not stable. It has a short half-life. It goes and does its job. And then you need more T4 to be converted to T3 to maintain the levels. So the total T3 and the total T4 are protein bound. They're not active the way they are. They have to be cleaved away from the protein in order to be active. The free T3 and the free T4 are actually active. And there's about 80% ratio of 80%, 20% of free T3 to free T4. And what your body needs to be able to do is convert from T4 to T3. If you can't convert from T4 to T3 accurately, then your metabolic rate is going to be down. So you want to look at that range of free T3. If you see your free T4 looks perfectly normal and your T4 looks normal, but your free T3 is low, then you need to be doing things to move that, like selenium is a good thing, and zinc, and selenium is the main one. Okay. Now the other thing is reverse T3. In the absence of adequate selenium and iodine, your T4, part of your T4 gets converted to reverse T3. And it's an irreversible. It just has to be used up and gotten rid of. But it's not active is what I mean. You can't up your metabolic rate with reverse T3. It's kind of a waste. Okay? And yes, you can convert reverse T3 back to T3, but it's under specific situations. Okay? Now, thyroid binding globulin, I've never run that. But it's there to be accurate. Thyroid binding globulin is a protein that the T3 and T4 are attached to before they become free. And so you can have problems with pulling the T3, T4 off that thyroid binding globulin, and those are usually related to estrogen. So estrogen or testosterone. The last two on the list are your antibodies. Antibodies are basically little immune, like Pac-Men, that go around and attack various cells in your body. So there's an anti-thyroglobulin antibody, and then there's the thyroid peroxidase antibody. One or both of those could be elevated in a
autoimmune thyroid condition, also known as Hashimoto's. So my understanding is that 80% of all cases of Hashimoto's have elevations of TPO, thyroid peroxidase. So if you want to save the person some money, you can just run TPO, but if you still suspect the problem and it comes back negative, you'd have to run the antithyroglobulin. And I have had a few people, I would say, I've done lots and lots of these tests, but I maybe had three people thus far where their TPO was fine and their antithyroglobulin was very high. So the ways your thyroid can misfunction are, of course, hypothyroidism, which means it's underfunctioning. And that doesn't just mean that it's underproducing. It could be an underfunctioning or a receptor resistance. The same way we get insulin resistance, we can get thyroid receptor resistance. And that happens mostly from stress, but also lack of selenium can do the same thing. Selenium is really important for that binding. Hyperthyroidism, where we're producing too much thyroid hormone and the cells are overly stimulated and person is jittery and has palpitations and sweats a lot. Autoimmune conditions, and that can go either way. Graves' disease is typically a hyperthyroidism, and actually most hyperthyroidism is related to Graves' disease. There's also a virally induced hyperthyroidism, but it's rare to have it not related to virus or antibodies. And it's basically antibodies that attack and cause your to have too much thyroid in your system. And then there's Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is typically a low thyroid. It's considered a hypothyroid, although you have within Hashimoto's something called thyroid storm, where there's been a lot of antibodies are attacking and it's releasing extra thyroid hormone into the system because of the damage to the thyroid tissue. And then you can get these spikes of hyperthyroid going back to the mostly the baseline, which is hypothyroid. And then there's subclinical thyroid conditions, and those are the ones that don't necessarily show up. There's a whole book called Why Do I Still Have Thyroid Symptoms When My Lab Tests Are Normal? You can't always tell from lab tests. And there's ways to tell from lab tests that are much more sophisticated than the typical person is used to getting, but there are other ways, and there's subclinical. Like I said before, the temperature, body temperature, is one of the best ways to assess your thyroid. So we've got the subclinical ones where the binding protein problems, like we just said, estrogen dominance causes an extra excess binding, and it causes you to not have enough of the free levels of the protein of the hormones. And then you've got thyroid receptor resistance, where usually cortisol has caused some damage to those, lack of selenium and even iodine can create that problem. And then there's something called Wilson's temperature syndrome. And there's a Dr. Wilson who I actually took a class with just about 2 months ago. And he has written books and, you know, had this protocol out for a long time where you measure the person's temperature, not necessarily the first thing in the morning, but you basically measure their temperature three times during waking hours and you average it. And if their resting temperature is less than 98 on average, then they're a good candidate, and he has a whole process for jump-starting the system and getting everything working using T3 and T3 alone, not T4. But that's beyond the scope of this. And cancer is another one. Thyroid cancer, you can get nodules. Thyroid cancer is considered one of the most treatable cancers, but heck, you don't want cancer. Usually what they do is they take out the thyroid, they irradiate it, they put you on radioactive iodine, and then you're without a thyroid and you have to take Synthroid or armor or something like that for the rest of your life. Not a pretty picture. So let's look a little bit more detail at some of these thyroid parameters, the labs. The basic stuff is usually if somebody goes to their medical doctor or they're being managed by an endocrinologist, they just run the TSH. And if the TSH is quote-unquote normal, then that's it. They don't run anything else. And a lot of thyroid issues are missed. I had a lady come to see me back in, I think it was February, and we start talking, and weight loss resistance and aches and pains and fatigue and brain fog and all these things. And I said to her, well, she said, oh, I have some labs. And I said, have you had your thyroid checked? Well, yeah, they tested it a few years back, and they said it was fine. So do you know what they tested? No, but they said they did a complete set of tests on my thyroid, and everything was fine. So I said, great. So we ran a test on her, and she had Hashimoto's big time. She had antibodies at 1,448. And I told her she had the distinction of being the person with the highest level of antibodies that I had worked with. Before that, I was like freaked out when I saw somebody had 800. She had 1,448. I said, I'd love to see those labs to see what it was like when that happened. Did they miss it? Did they not do it? What was it? Well, she finally did find those labs, and their idea of a thorough thyroid check was they did TSH and T4. And what else they do? That's all they did. They didn't do any antibodies. They didn't do any reverse T3. Nothing. That was it. So we started working, and she's thrilled because now her antibodies after 6 months are down to like 300, and her TSH was up there. It was 5.9. She said, I don't want to go on any medication. I just want to do this naturally. And now her TSH is under 3. So this stuff works. But the point is, what's considered a basic screen to me may not be what's considered a basic screen to everyone. But functional medicine-wise, and if you look at someplace like Direct Labs, their thyroid panel within the CWP contains the total T4, the T3 uptake, the three free thyroxine index, and TSH. Okay? I personally don't think the free thyroxine index or the T3 uptake are worthwhile. They're just... I don't even remember how they're calculated, but they're calculated. They're not measured. That's why they include them for free in the test. So the extras that I think everybody should have would be the antibodies, the thyroid peroxidase, the antithyroglobulin, the free T3. Because here's my thinking. If I know how much the thyroid is making, the total T4, and how much is reaching the cells, the free T3, then I know where the breakdown is happening. But if they just run me, like some of them run free total T3 and free T4, well, that's the in-betweens. It's fine if we have those, but I want to see the beginning and end. I want to see where the breakdown is in that function so that we can help to restore it. If I had to give the stripped-down version of this, what I would want would be total T4, TSH, the antibodies, and free T3. That would be the minimum. And the total T3, you don't look at that much. And then reverse T3. Because reverse T3 says that there's a stress with converting T4 to T3, and it's being converted to T3. Stress cortisol has an effect on that. Low levels of selenium and iodine have to do with that. It's huge. So, and it's not measured that often. But according to Dr. Wilson, he was saying, you know, if nobody doesn't want to pay any money for any tests, fine. Buy a thermometer. We'll do the thermometer, and we'll do all the protocols based on the thermometer. So that's a pretty bold statement. There are a whole bunch of medications. You have this list. You can look with people, check off anything here. If they're on any of these medications, that's going to affect their thyroid. Okay, so thyroid case one. Let's take a look. I'm going to get your feedback here, okay? Okay, we have TSH at 2.58, perfectly within this functional range. We have a total T4 of 6.7 in the functional range, but at the low end of the functional range. Free thyroxine index 2.2, it's fine. T3 uptake 3.3. So she did the standard panel, and I said, just go ahead and do the thyroid peroxidase antibody. What did she come up with? A 140. Here's a person who, had she done what Bayari's doctor recommended, like I'll only do the other tests if the first ones show up abnormal, they would have missed that this woman has a thyroid peroxidase antibody of 140, which is substantial. And what that means is that, well, we're just going to wait until her body destroys her thyroid and those other numbers get abnormal before we intervene. That's the problem of a non-functional approach. That's the problem here. This person would have gotten missed. Now we took her off gluten. We put her on a protocol. We have her supporting herself, and her antibodies are gone. A year. Took a while. It takes a while. But they're gone. Okay? Would have been missed on the normal screen. And meanwhile, she's got bullets shooting at her thyroid all day long, every day. Not good. We want it gone. Let's look at the second case. This one, the TSH is running a little bit high, right? 4.08, 3.96. Oh, these are out of order. But the most recent one is the 626. This is an old lab. 3.964. She has thyroxin T4 is at 7.5. Those are perfectly fine. The free thyroxin index is 2.9. Free T4 was okay. So what I'm going to ask you here, we don't have enough to go on here. She's got an elevated TSH. We don't know why. We don't know what's going on with this, right? We can assume, well, let's just try iodine with her. Let's just try selenium. We don't know what her free T3 is. So what labs do you want her to do? Anybody? TPO, thank you. Yeah, antibodies, right. Right, okay? Because we want to see what's going on. What's causing that? What's causing that? All right? Why is her pituitary having to work so hard to get her thyroid to work? Why? Okay? Maybe the thyroid doesn't have enough iodine, and it's got to be pumped and pumped and pumped to get more levels up. We don't know that, right? So Bridget says 98% is best during follicular phase of cycle. I never see this, and I look at a lot of temperature charts. Well, you're looking at the basal body temperature, Bridget, when you're looking at for pregnancy, right? You're looking at the basal body temperature. We're looking at the temperature during the day, which is going to be significantly higher. But, yeah, 98. And if they're low and these people are having trouble conceiving, it could be their thyroid. Yeah. So you might have them do the afternoons as well to see what they are. Okay. And, yeah, TPO and free T3 is what I would do, and then maybe antithyroglobulin if the TPO. Now, what may happen is you're like, this person has a thyroid issue. I know they do. They're having all these symptoms, but everything looks normal. You run the antibodies, they look normal. You've got to assume that that's a receptor problem. That's a receptor problem, right? Okay, so we have insufficient information on this one. She's got a progressively worsening TSH, although it's not necessarily progressively worsening because, oh, this is an 09. Yeah, she does. She has I was reading it backwards. She has a progressively worsening TSH. So something's going on. We need to see those antibodies. We need to do the free T3. Yeah, and I would say the T3 uptake doesn't need to be done. I would just do the free T3. Okay, let's see this one. We have a TSH that's lower than the 1.38, and now, like I said, more and more research is supporting that between 1 and 3, and some even between 1 and 2 would be ideal, so I'm not concerned about that. Although if we have a TSH that low and she has a high T4, then that says to me we have to watch out for hyperthyroid. Her T3 uptake is good, her free thyroxin index is good. She has her antibodies. She has 20 and 7. Now, that doesn't seem like much, right? It's just a little bit. But like I said earlier, how many bullets do you want shooting and hitting your window by the drive-by shooter? You want them to be zero as close as possible, at least under 10. If I see somebody with their antibodies but they're under 10, I'll say, you know, you've got a little bit of antibody activity. Let's just do stuff to calm your immune system and keep it calm so this doesn't get any worse. But this is something she needs to be addressing. Absolutely needs to be addressing, right? And we'll talk about ways to address it on the next couple of slides. Okay. The other thing I might do with this one is the TSI antibodies, thyroid stimulating immunoglobulins, to see if there is a Graves. And it probably isn't because you really do see these numbers way different. You see a much lower TSH and a much higher T4. But just because she's heading to the high end of the normal range, it may not be a bad idea. But definitely you want to be working with this person on a preventative basis. Okay? So here's a list of the most important nutrients for your thyroid. It needs iodine. Triiodotyrosine is the T3. And T4 is basically 4 iodines and a tyrosine. So you need iodine. If you don't have enough iodine, you can't make enough. Okay, so iodine's critical. You need selenium. Without selenium, you cannot bind to the receptors and you cannot convert from T4 to T3. You need selenium. Zinc's important all throughout. Iron is important, and tyrosine, of course, is the raw material, so you have to have enough of that. Okay, so these are the important nutrients for the thyroid. And then there's some vitamins, A, D. If somebody doesn't have good D levels, their autoimmune disease is not going to go away. They're not going to have a good thyroid function. B2, B6, and B12, and bioflavonoids. These are the most important nutrients. You have to make sure your people are sufficient in these. So I just wanted to give you a brief little Hashimoto's management course. You could probably find a lot more information about this by Googling it and getting, there's a number of good books on it. But just to give you some stuff, and I would highly recommend Dr. Karazian's book, Why Do I Still Have Thyroid Symptoms When My Lab Tests Are Normal, if you plan to work with people that have thyroid issues, especially like with Bridget being in working with fertility. Thyroid is a huge problem with infertility, a huge cause of it. So you want to support your immune system. Your immune system is key. The T regulatory cells, T helpers and T helper 1 and T helper 2 are usually out of balance when you've got an autoimmune disease. Usually it's towards the T helper 1s, but sometimes it's T helper 2s, and they're just different kinds of T cells that when they get out of balance, you have lots of problems. You definitely need to avoid gluten and other allergy-containing foods. 100% gluten avoidance is mandatory for recovery. They've done stuff with people. They've done studies with people with taking them off the gluten when they had Hashimoto's antibodies, and in 6 months their Hashimoto's antibodies were completely gone. Sometimes that's all you need to do, and other times you have to do a lot more. We had one person who did B4 Be Gone last year, and she came into the program, and she lost, by January she had lost 70 pounds. And she moved to a new city, went to the doctor for a checkup to see, and the doctor's looking at her labs and looking at her and looking at the medications, and she says, something doesn't jive. You don't look sick. You look perfectly normal. Everything I'm examining is perfectly normal. Let's take you off all your medications and then we'll test you in 2 months. She did. She took her off all her thyroid medication, her hypertension medication. And this is a woman who was threatened that she was going to have to go on, diabetes, pre-diabetic kind of stuff soon. And she went and retested, and it was perfect, and she said, you don't have Hashimoto's. She had had it since she was 13. She's 67, so she'd had it for 54 years. She'd been on thyroid medication, and this was in 7 months, 8 months, that she had completely cured it. Now, she has to keep it away, and that's important, but she's feeling great. She's 70 pounds lighter. She has lots of energy, and this stuff kind of works. Essential fatty acids are critical for anything related to autoimmune. Keeping the blood sugars are very, very important for this, and that's what she had done. She balanced her blood sugars. Get repairing leaky gut. If you've got leaky gut and you've got toxins and large food particles leaking into your bloodstream and creating an autoimmune attack, you're going to have problems. Decrease stress, support adrenals, increase your vitamin D levels. With any kind of autoimmune, I like to keep them closer to 100, and then you need to add the powerful antioxidants, not just vitamin E and C, but glutathione and glutathione-enhancing foods and nutrients like turmeric and ashwagandha, CoQ10 and Romania are really good for helping to support this pathway. You can get into things like NAC and acetylcysteine. Apex Energetics has a cream that has the glutathione and NAC and SOD, which are all good antioxidants. People can apply that cream. You can even apply it right over the thyroid. And then, so those are good things to do. I gave you this. You can look this over. Remember I had earlier on the vitamin D supplementation chart? This is just a modified version of that supplementation chart with people with Hashimoto's or other kinds of autoimmune disease. And you can just keep that and, you know, refer to it. Keep it in your little book of references, because you're not going to necessarily remember it until you've been doing it a lot. Okay? And I want to give you a few thyroid books and resources. The thing with the Karazian's book, he's really anti-iodine. Because there were some studies that came out that said with Hashimoto's, too much iodine can hurt it. But on the other hand, too little iodine can hurt it. So it's really a matter of finding out if people have iodine. There's no standard blood test for it. There's an iodine loading test that Zita had given me information on. There is place called the Canary Club that does some sort of it's not a loading test, but it's more of a saliva test. I'm not sure how accurate that one is. Oh, no, it's a urine test. So it's really a matter of really knowing the idea with the iodine. This woman who cured her Hashimoto's and both of my people who are in the process of doing that, they take a lot of sea vegetables. They don't take big, huge doses of iodine because I'm a little bit more careful than that. And until I feel comfortable that there's a really good way to test a real accurate way to test iodine, then I'm just cautious with it. But too much of it, like David Bronstein, the one at the bottom, iodine, why you need it and why you can't live without it, he says you can't not put a person on Hashimoto's on iodine unless you know for sure that they have too much, because it's so critical for repairing.